Facebook and MySpace are primarily focused on the U.S. market, although this is changing. But the phenomenon is not a purely American one. Social networking site Orkut, owned by Google, has over 100 million users, mostly in Brazil and India. A good dozen other sites around the world account for at least another 200 million users. These numbers reflect a more general trend. The first years of the internet surge, culminating in the dot-com bubble and its burst, were all about accessing information and interacting with others through the global network. Call it Web 1.0, if you want. By 2001, users began realizing that the internet wasn't just a network to receive information, but one where you could produce and share information with your peers, often termed Web 2.0. Young people especially have embraced these Web 2.0 capabilities. By late 2007, Pew Research, an American organization surveying trends, found that 2 out of 3 teens have participated in one or more among a wide range of content-creating activities on the internet, with more girls creating and sharing content than boys. On an average day, Facebook receives 10 million web requests from users around the world every second. As professors John Palfrey and Urs Gasser have elaborately detailed, disclosing one's information, whether these are Facebook entries, personal diaries and commentaries, often in the form of blogs, photos, friendships and relationships, like links or friends, content preferences and identification, including online photos or tags, one's geographic location through geotagging or sites like Doppler, or just short text updates, Twitters, has become deeply embedded into youth culture around the world. As these young people grow older and more adults adopt similar traits, Stacy Snyder's case will become paradigmatic, not just for an entire generation, but for our society as a whole. Web 2.0 has fueled this development, but conventional publishing, paired with the power of the internet, has rendered surprisingly similar results. Take the case of Andrew Feldmar, a Canadian psychotherapist in his late 60s living in Vancouver. In 2006, on his way to pick up a friend from Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, he tried to cross the U.S.-Canadian border as he had done over 100 times before. This time, however, a border guard queried an internet search engine for Feldmar. Out popped an article Feldmar had written for an interdisciplinary journal in 2001, in which he mentioned he had taken LSD in the 1960s. Feldmar was held for 4 hours, fingerprinted, and after signing a statement that he had taken drugs almost 4 decades ago, was barred from further entry into the United States. Andrew Feldmar, an accomplished professional with no criminal record, knows he violated the law when he took LSD in the 1960s. But he maintains he has not taken drugs since 1974, more than 30 years before the border guard stopped him. For Feldmar, it was a time in his life that was long past, an offense that he thought had long been forgotten by society as irrelevant to the person he had become. But because of digital technology, society's ability to forget has become suspended, replaced by perfect memory. Much of Stacy Snyder's pain, some say, is self-inflicted. She put her photo on her webpage and added an ambiguous caption. Perhaps she did not realize that the whole world could find her webpage, and that her photo might remain accessible through internet archives long after she had taken it offline. As part of the internet generation, though, maybe she could have been more judicious about what she disclosed on the internet. This was different for Andrew Feldmar, however. Approaching 70, he was no teenage internet nerd and likely never foresaw that his article in a relatively obscure journal would become so easily accessible on the worldwide net. For him, falling victim to digital memory must have come as an utter and shocking surprise.